This is CBS Eye on the World, Hotel Mars, episode end. Dr. Space, David Livingston is here as my colleague and co-pilot, and we're very pleased to explore what it means, Ukraine crisis, the International Space Station, Roscosmos, NASA, and the late 20th century utopian idea of working together. What does all of this come to? And I welcome Jeff Faust, writing most recently at the Space Review, to take us to one particular practical application. An astronaut now on board ISS, Mark Vandehei. He is scheduled to return to Earth on a Soyuz at the end of March. Jeff, a very good evening to you. This seat is paid for, you tell me. Is it assured? Does NASA have confidence? And is there a workaround to your understanding? Good evening, Jeff.
Good evening, John. Right now, the plan is still for Mark Vandehei to come back to Earth on March 30th on that Soyuz seat. He flew up on a Soyuz spacecraft nearly a year ago, so he's going to come back on that Soyuz. If for some reason the geopolitical situation prevents that from happening, a potential plan B would be to take advantage of a commercial mission, a SpaceX Crew Dragon mission by a company called Axiom Space that is launching to the space station around the same time at the end of March. It's possible that they could free up a seat on that mission that would allow Mark Vandehei to come back on that in early April. But that is sort of a contingency plan. Right now, everything is running pretty much as normal on the space station, despite everything that's taking place down here on Earth.
Yes, all nominal. Although, you know, pilots and people who hang out with pilots have a way of saying everything's okay right before the Titanic sinks. I've noticed that over the years. So, David, you have a question for Jeff.
Jeff, everything seems okay now, but Monday you opined on your space review that the end of international space cooperation was happening. Do you think it's going to survive, or is it ending?
Well, the space station, I think, is going to become sort of the last vestige of that era of U.S.-Russian cooperation in space that started 30 years ago. After the fall of the Soviet Union, and the U.S. and Russia looked to cooperate in space by bringing Russia into what was then known as Space Station Freedom, and now the International Space Station, and also taking advantage of other Russian space technologies like rocket engines. And so you saw increased cooperation between Russia and the U.S. and other Western countries like Europe in space. But now, you know, with both the invasion of Ukraine, but even going back to the annexation of Crimea in 2014, you can see that cooperation start to fade, that the realization that the partnership that once existed between Russia and the U.S., between Russia and the West in space, is not going to survive the changing geopolitics here on Earth.
This is not only about NASA. February 28th, the European Space Agency, ESA, made an announcement about a mission to Mars. What did they say, and what is the prospect, Jeff?
Europe was working with Russia on a mission called ExoMars that would send a rover to Mars. It was going to launch on a Russian rocket in September, but ESA announced at the end of February that it was very unlikely that launch would proceed in light of the invasion and the sanctions and so on, which means that Europe will have to find another ride for that rover, which almost certainly means a delay of at least 2 years for that launch. But that was a decision that Europe decided to take because, again, of the invasion, because of the sanctions, those outweighed the benefits of any sort of continued civil space cooperation between Europe and Russia.
The ESA was not naturally an opponent ever of a Roscosmos, to my memory. These were back in the space race days, the heady days of the Cold War. Does the ESA have a way of dealing with Roscosmos that's impossible for NASA? Can it sidestep this ideological dispute between Moscow and Washington?
Increasingly not. What we're seeing is, just as on Earth, the U.S. and the European Union and other Western nations are cooperating in terms of sanctions against Russia, we're seeing Western space agencies work together and providing a united front in terms of declining to work further with Russia on many of these civil space programs outside of the International Space Station.
David?
I'm hearing, Jeff, that many think that an early demise before 2030 of the space station might be a blessing in disguise, because it would free up the market for American private stations to start functioning and doing what they're going to do. And the private stations promise a lot and are rich on promises. How do you see that?
I think the problem with that argument is that getting a commercial space station in orbit by 2030 was already sort of a pretty long stretch. It was going to be pretty tough to do to get a commercial space station in place by the time the ISS is retired in 2030, simply because of the technological issues, the expense of doing so. No space program runs ahead of schedule. They always tend to run behind schedule, and I think a commercial space station would be the same. So if you retire the ISS or end the ISS program in 2024 or even earlier, you will have a gap in low Earth orbit for several years before a commercial space station is in place. And in that case, the only space station that would be operational in that scenario would be the Chinese space station.
There is a presumption that China endorses Russia's predation in Ukraine. At least that's what it appears when the two leaders met at the first day of the Olympics. Is there any indication that Roscosmos is moving to work with the Chinese space program?
Even before the invasion of Ukraine, Russia was looking to cooperate more closely with China. The two had put together last year a proposal for what they called an International Lunar Research Station that would eventually result in a base at the South Pole of the Moon, probably sometime in the 2030s. Not a lot of details had come out about that, and also it was unclear who else besides Russia and China would participate in this international station. It's noteworthy, though, that we haven't heard much since then, and also there hasn't been much signs of other cooperation between Russia and China in space, particularly in the weeks since the invasion.
David?
Were Russia to want to pull out of the station, can a Dragon or a Cygnus keep the station orbiting and keep it in place? Are they powerful enough to do that?
That's a lot of the contingency planning that's going on right now, no doubt, at Mission Control in Houston and elsewhere, because what the key capability that Russia now provides for the space station is the propulsion to keep it in orbit, to keep the atmospheric drag from bringing it down. And so if Russia was no longer to operate their part of the space station or even to remove it entirely, you would need to replace that. And there is some discussion about using the Cygnus cargo spacecraft, which is an American commercial cargo spacecraft, to provide that. Possibly a way to use the Dragon cargo spacecraft or the Crew Dragon spacecraft to do so. But those are just notional plans at this point. There's no clear strategy for how those would be used, how many you would need, and how much that would cost to do. So those are certainly contingency plans that, if they had not been fully fleshed out before the invasion last week, are being done so, I think, at an accelerated rate now.
In your piece at Space Review, Jeff, you quote the president, this is from earlier in February, about sanctions visited upon Russian technology. The president said, these sanctions, it'll degrade their aerospace and space industry, including their space program. Was that a surprise to NASA? Was that a surprise to Roscosmos that they were being included in the contest?
I don't think it was a surprise because there had already been sanctions going back to 2014, limiting the export of certain high technology components used in satellites that Russia needed for their spacecraft. And NASA put out a statement shortly after the president's speech noting that the sanctions excluded specifically the cooperation on the International Space Station in much the same way that space stations excluded from a lot of the export controls that affect American space technology. But again, the question will be, what is Russia's response going to be and how long are they going to be willing to commit to operating the space station, no matter what NASA says and what the other international partners on the ISS say?
David, we have a minute. Go ahead.
Jeff, you've been doing this a long time. You have great instincts. Your take, does the station survive this challenge, or if not, what's the timeline for the demise?
I think in the short term, it will survive this because Russia has a lot to lose as well. If they abandon the space station, they would effectively no longer have a human spaceflight program because they don't really have the capability for at least several years to put up their own space station. So it's going to be a big loss for them. So, the sort of the mutual assured destruction, so to speak, of departing the ISS may keep them bound together, at least in the short term. I think it's going to be very difficult, though, to keep that full full international partnership in place on the ISS to 2030. So we may see Russia bow out in 2024, which is their current date that they said that they're committed to, which means that the international partners that remain, including NASA, will have to come up with either a contingency plan to make up for what they lose when Russia departs, or decide to abandon the space station and attempt to accelerate those commercial space stations that will take its place.
Jeff Faust is the editor and publisher of the Space Review. He is also a senior staff writer with Space News, and he operates the spacetoday.net website. David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show, spaceshow.com. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batchelor.